group of 10 of us. That Mickey Joseph's mother and father in that group. You know?
Well, that's what Mickey told me. He said that Rose and... No, which is Rose, your wife?
Yeah.
And Mickey's mom, which is... What's her name?
Fran.
We're in elementary school together. Or...
No, they started to work together. And so did Charlie, Mickey's father, at down here right after the war. They all met. And then we all got married within the same time. Had the, they all had we all had kids within the same period, and in the group. And I think everybody's been married 53 years or more, and nobody's dead.
That's
out of the five.
That's a rarity to be married 50
that
years
long,
nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm here with Charlie Silvera, and I'm interviewing you on behalf of SABR, Society for American Baseball Research. This tape will be submitted to Cooperstown and made available to researchers all over the country. Good morning, and thank you for meeting with me. We got a little jackhammer here in the background, so hopefully you won't pick it up on the tape too much. I don't know. The first question I ask everybody, I guess, is, was there a moment that you can remember where you thought to yourself, wow, maybe I can play baseball in the major league someday?
Yeah, definitely. I signed out of high school in 1942 here in San Francisco. And Jerry Coleman and I went back and played half of that year in Wellsville, New York, in the Pony League. And that was, the war was on. And Jerry and then the other fellow with us decided to go into the Marine Air Corps. And so I decided, well, I'll take a chance. And I was the scout that signed me, got me stationed up in Sacramento with major and minor league players. And we ended up eventually playing with Joe DiMaggio, Red Ruffing, and Joe Gordon of the Yankees, and playing over in Hawaii. I was 18 years old when I went into service, and at 19, I'm playing with all these former Major League and Coast League players, and I saw players and catchers who had played in the Major Leagues, and I said, I can play in the Major Leagues. So that was a very good incentive for me.
And do you remember what you batted there? Or?
Oh, I don't know. I was... I didn't bat a hell of a lot. I think because I tried to emulate DiMaggio a little bit, and which was the wrong thing to do because everybody had a distinct batting style, as did Joe. And I finally settled in after a few years in the minor league, where I got comfortable knowing that I wasn't going to hit home runs. After looking at Yankee Stadium in left field, I knew definitely I wasn't going to hit any home runs. Most home runs I hit in 1 year was five in the Coast League in 1948 with Portland.
And do you remember your first meeting with first time you met Joe DiMaggio?
My first meeting with Joe DiMaggio was when we were garrisoned over in Hamilton Field, and we were supposed to fly over to Hawaii. Joe had joined us from Santa Ana, the air base down there, and things were changed. We went to Seattle, waited for a boat up there. Ship, I should say, to take us to Hawaii. So that was my first meeting with DiMaggio. But I had seen Joe play as a kid. I lived 8 blocks from Seal Stadium in the city, San Francisco. So it wasn't that Joe wasn't a person that was unknown to me, but just meeting him, and of course he was actually my idol, because this was really a Yankee town, because there was Joe and Rosari and Frankie Crucetti, and you know, and so this was Joe was Joe was a quiet leader to me, and that continued on and during the service, and then when we were in New York, Joe was very good to Rose and me, and getting his tickets to theaters, and included us in his 50 years as a Yankee celebration.
Wow. Now, so you're saying, consequently, because a lot of Yankees lived here, were there a lot of Yankee fans in this area before the Giants moved here?
Well, there were Seal fans. I don't think there were many what so-called Yankee fans. Of course, television didn't come along, wasn't national until, I think, the first World Series was 52, nationwide being telecast. But, we had our own little sphere of things. You know, the Yankee Scout lived here in San Francisco, Joe DeMine, and we made a lot of functions. He saw that after we went around to different, schools. And of course, it was generally for nothing. And We were number two, probably, I mean, to the number three, the Yankees, to the Seals and Oaks, and that was their baseball. And then when the Giants eventually came, of course, they came from the big city, and but we had had pretty good baseball out here all the time, you know. A lot of people back east thought we were still fighting Indians out here.
Now, did the San Francisco Yankee players kind of hang together in New York, or... Not
well, yeah, of course there was Jerry Coleman, Bobby Brown, Gil McDougall, Paulette was from San Jose, Renna later on, Andy Carey was from Alameda, of course Jackie Jensen and Billy Martin from Oakland. So yeah, we were probably more friendly than anybody else. I mean, we didn't always room together. I roomed with Jerry. But we, you know, we still correspond, Jerry and I and Bobby Brown and Carrie. We stay pretty close. Our friendships are real, real tight, you know.
Now you, so you went to St. Ignatius.
St. Ignatius High, yeah.
Right. And
Brown was at Galileo. Jerry was at Lowell. Rustelli was at Galileo. Of course, he didn't play at the Yankees. And Jim Davis was at Poly High. So there were five out of that one graduating class in 42 that made it to the big league.
And how did you do in the high school?
Well, I led the league in hitting. I had a good year. And that was a story. This is Ed Rose.
Hi, Ed.
Nice to meet you.
What's going on across the street?
Oh, I don't know.
You're digging up something.
Well, I think I'll put all these telephones back in there.
Yeah, anyhow, this is for Cooperstown. What the heck? I've done a few tapes for Cooperstown. I've done a lot of interviews.
Well, I was looking at that book over there, Pride of October. I was trying to get that through Amazon before I talked to you, because I guess you're one of the featured guys.
Yeah, well, I'm one of 18. I'm down the lower right-hand corner. We were back in Jersey about 6 weeks ago, and Barrow was there, Whitey, and Rizzuto, and Pepitone, Tommy Byrne. Well, Madden said I was one of the guys there. I gave him the idea of writing the book. It's not that I was a star, but I was like a Yankee, you know. I signed with the Yankees and came up through the organization, so I was happy to be included in that group. Pretty good names in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, of course, it was during the... It hasn't sold well, I guess, because it came out right after the war started, the Iraqi mm-hmm. war. Yeah, it didn't do well, and it's never been on the bestseller list. And Williams' book, with Dominic and Pesky, going to see Ted Williams sold a lot, and I guess it didn't have the hype that it needed to sell well, but it's been picking up, you know, people.
Now, how long did he interview you for that? How many hours did
he came out here, we went down to Lefty Old Duels, and I guess he interviewed me maybe, we had breakfast down, brunch down here, lunch, a couple hours.
So he got all that information in a couple hours.
Well, and then, of course, a lot of all he had, you know, he could look it up. He's a writer for the news, you know.
Right.
But all he had to do was look up some of it.
Right.
Of course, when you have 18 people and most of them superstars, mm-hmm. you can get a hell of a lot more information.
Right.
You don't need to.
Well, I found, you know, the internet is so great.
Yeah.
Because I found an article that they did back on you in the Milpitas Post newspaper.
Yeah, about two weeks ago. 2 months ago.
Yeah, and then yeah. Here's another one that they did for the Examiner.
Which one is that?
Where they talked about the stadiums. David Kiefer.
Holy.
And he has you. And at the end here, it's pretty neat. They have your ratings on Charlie's top five, the five stadiums. I guess.
I played at all the.
I know.
Every ballpark that the Seals have played in, and the Giants have played in, and including this new one. We had the honor of the veterans, and I took the first opening pitch from Dave Rigetti,
right?
And I played with his father. So I was at Ewing Field. I played there.
Right. They say you're the only person ever to have played in all five parts.
Well, it's not played, but I did catch a ball.
Well, in them.
All right, played in them.
Yeah.
Do you want to show them that at your
ceremonial
place?
Or whatever?
Yeah, this is when we went back to Jersey. They had it in Jersey, and then we went. Rose was at real with Carmen Barra at Yogi's Museum, and that's the horse that Rizzuto gave Yogi. It's the holy cow horse. It's a holy cow. We all signed it. Beautiful museum. I had been there before. You know, it's a small Cooperstown.
Oh, and then this, you're pointing at a picture, I guess, of all the catchers. Some particular year in spring training, probably.
It was.
Yeah. Spring training. Yeah.
Wow.
And I had a correction,
this,
huh?
Who's this on the far left?
That's Tommy Byrne. He was a left-handed pitcher, yeah.
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 Wow.
It is really something. I mean,
that's great.
It is. And it was...
Well, don't they have events in Atlantic City once in a while where they try to get all the old Yankees together?
They have gotten different Yankee pennant winners. The 1953 Yankees. That's the five consecutive World Championships. They've never done a thing for that club. It just... The 50th year passed by, and they celebrated the Yankees 100 years. And they forgot all about the 53 club. And there's only four guys alive. There were eight of us that were there for every game. Brown and Coleman had to go back to the Korean War. And the four that are alive, three of them are at every old-timers game. Bauer, Yogi, and Rizzuto. And I never got an invitation. It sort of hurt me. You know, but she hadn't been well. I doubt if I'd have made it, but I could. I would like to
be invited.
I would like to have the right of refusal. Nobody's ever done a thing for that club, and that'll never be done again.
Yeah.
You could, for one reason, I mean, the free agency, and for another reason, you've got to win two series before you get to the World Series.
Right.
Got to win 11 games to beat the World Championship. Now we only had to win four.
That's why I think it's bogus that they
said, oh, you mean in record books?
Yeah, they said Bernie Williams has more than
that
shouldn't count.
That's ridiculous. Well, see, that is the mentality, I think, of the people and some of the writers. Oop, is that on?
Yeah, you didn't swear.
No, but I'm talking about, they forget about too many people, they think baseball was... started when they saw their first game.
Right.
Nobody ever played the game before.
No tradition, no respect.
No respect, they don't. They don't, yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'm a fan, but of course I was pretty fortunate in the respect that, everybody should have had a Yogi Berra. I had one. You know, a lot of guys, I didn't play much. Hell, I...
So you got along with him, there was never... Did you ever have moments of animosity and said, I'm going to be stuck behind him forever? Or?
No. After the first, my first full year was 49. I had opened the season in 47 and 48 and finished. The reason I was recalled in 48, Yogi was playing the outfield. And then the next year they brought in Stengel and Bill Dickey as a coach, and that's when Yogi went back to catching.
Right.
But I was recalled from the Portland club the last week of the season. Well, I'd already finished in Portland. I was going to get married that in 2 weeks. Had to postpone the wedding.
So you were one of those late call-ups like they do in...
I was called up because Narhouse broke his finger, the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And I was recalled because I had a good year at Portland.
And that was in 48?
48.
48.
Who's that, Rose?
Marge with my tape.
And so... The second string catcher, though, he was the first string catcher, then he got hurt, and Yogi was playing the outfield.
Yeah, Gus Narhouse was the first string catcher.
I mean, didn't you ever secretly hope that they would put Yogi in the outfield permanently? Did they ever?
Did they
ever discuss that after he came back?
No, I don't think so. No.
They say Bill Dickey made him.
Well, yeah, he did, but Yogi had natural talent, too. But Dickey and just refined him. And Yogi was a horse. I didn't race the first year. He got hurt that first year in 49. I got to play the last 6 weeks. And after that, it was like in 1950. I didn't go to bat until June the 17th. My first daughter was born, and I was number two catcher. Hawk was number three. And Yogi caught, you know, I might have finished the game, but I never got to bat until June the 17th in St. Louis.
Well, you didn't. You only got 14 at-bats
in 50.
48.
Yeah.
But you batted 571, so yeah, you got a lot of
hits. No, I'm talking about 50.
Oh, 50, okay.
When Yogi, I didn't get to bat until June the 17th.
Yeah, you were in 18 games, 25 at-bats.
Yeah, and Yogi and Hawk maybe had 10. And Yogi did all the rest. Well, you know, but no, I never felt, no. We were the best of friends. We ran around together. We didn't have any, we were all married at the same time, and we were very close.
Did Bill Dickey work with you?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. I had my manager, Jim Turner, at Portland, ended up being Yankee pitching coach. See, there was there were about 10 of us at Portland.
Now Portland was AAA.
AAA. They also had Kansas City and Newark, and then partial agreement with Portland. And Turner was the pitcher, but he knew more about catching than anybody I ever played for. So he taught me things from a pitcher standpoint, you know, about catching. No, Dickie was a great asset to all of us, you know, all the guys, the catchers especially, you know. And Yogi was a pretty good catcher. He could, and he was intelligent. Man, he knew what was going on all the time. He when a meeting was, when they're talking over hitters, he would say, well, maybe we better change. This guy is beginning to be a high ball hitter. We've been pitching him high. And he's getting to hit that ball. So they listen. Whenever Yogi said anything, people listen. Still, even now.
Yeah. What do you think about a lot of those, the fact they say a lot of those Yogi-isms were made up by reporters?
Yeah, a lot of them were, but a lot of them he says on his own. I've never, when he came out with those with that book about all the different his sayings.
Right,
there
are
few of them that I was in his company that had never been recorded.
Do you remember any funny ones?
Well, one time we were going to go on an off day where the Yankee PR man came and says, Yogi, you want to go to this affair next Monday? You have an off night. So I said, well, I don't know. He said, well, Charlie's going to go. So what are they going to give us? He says, well, I think they're going to give us a 20-gauge Remington. He said, geez, I always did want a camera. And a few more.
I like the one where he's talking to the mayor's wife, and she looks, he's wearing a lot of clothes, and she, I don't know if he's not wearing clothes, she goes, are you going to be warm in that? And he said, you don't look so hot yourself, or something like that.
Yeah. Well, he says even his kids, they said, he comes out with those things, you know, and not a logic behind what he says at times. He's not, you know, he didn't have much schoolhouse, but he could tell you who was the best hockey player. You know, he used to work out with the St. Louis Blues when he lived there. And the roller derby, he was the roller derby champion. He could tell you who it was, you know. And he was very up on things.
And he was originally from St. Louis. He played with Joe Garagiola. They were buddies.
Right, they were the neighbors.
And what you read a lot about him and they Vera, and one of the things they say, guys who played with him, is that you look at his body and his physical structure, and you couldn't believe that he was as good as he was.
No, he could run. He ran well, you know. And of course, when he if he backed up a play at first base, you know, he sort of knocked me in, and he knocked his shin guard together, and before he could give the sign, he'd have to get him back in place again. But he was like he said, I got a funny built, but he was a good athlete. Yeah.
Now, did you always play catcher, including in high school?
Oh, my last year in high school, we didn't have much pitching, so I pitched and played short.
But you were always
most, primarily a catcher all along.
Why was that?
Well, I started at CYO at Mission Dolores, and the pitcher who was generally the big guy, you know, and his name was Tom Pagey, came around. I was in the fifth grade, and he was a grade ahead of me, and he says, We need a catcher. Would you like to try to catch? And I said, fine. So that's how I started. And it was the best thing that ever happened.
And so you were signed after your senior year at SI?
Yeah.
And you were signed by the Yankees. Were any other teams pitching you?
Oh, yeah, the Red Sox and Brooklyn made some overtures. Cincinnati. The Red Sox and the Dodgers and the Yankees were the only ones that were giving any kind of money around here. There was only a couple of full-time scouts in this area at that time. Joe Devine was the one. He had to work for Pittsburgh for years, and he signed Joe Cronin and Tiny Bonham out of the area. Of course, then he got Brown, myself, Coleman, all the rest of them, the Yankees, McDougal.
Now, I read somewhere that you said that you, in a way, wanted to play for the Seals.
That's right. I did go on a Sunday morning. My father and my mother and I went up to the tower at Seal Stadium there and see Mr. Graham. I was negotiating at that time. And went up there, and all we can do is offer you $125 a month and send you to San Jose. The Seals had the San Jose Club that year. I think that was the first year.
What was the name of the team? San Jose
Bees? San Jose Bees, I guess.
Yeah.
I think that was the year that the ballpark opened, I think.
When they play in Muni?
Yeah, now.
Right.
But that was the only year they were in the league. And the league folded in 42 because of the war.
Right.
They didn't finish. So Coleman and I and this other Bob Cherry went back to Wellsville in the Pony League, which was a Yankee. It was a D league then. You know, they didn't have any rookie leagues.
So then you signed, and you went.
So I signed. We finished a year there, and that's when the other two guys, Jerry and then Bob Cherry, went off to be Flyers, and Joe Devine got a lot of us, Ferris Fane and Judnick, Lodigiani, a lot of local guys to go play ball up at McClellan Field. You know, every base had its baseball and basketball team. Some of them, the bigger ones, had football teams. But, you know, that's what we did all during the war. And that's, in a way, you don't like to talk about it, but because it killed a lot of people's careers. But for me, it was the best thing that happened because I got to play with these major leaguers and coast leaguers and minor league players.
Right.
And then, as I said before, after seeing some of the players who were in the big leagues, especially the catchers, I knew I could play in the big leagues.
Right. Now, so then where did you go after the war?
After the war, I went to because of DiMaggio and Joe Gordon, I went to spring training with the Yankees in Panama.
What year was that?
1946.
46.
We were in spring training February 1st.
And then you were 21 years old.
Yeah, right. I'm 21. And then I went from there and started and finished the season at Kansas City, the American Association, their AAA, one of their AAA clubs. And the next year, they got the working agreement with Portland. I opened with the Yankees. In those days, they carried extra guys and two or three extra pitchers and an extra catcher, so they could have extra batting practice. You know, you could carry 30 guys, and you didn't have to have 25 like they do now. But just as soon as that was over, then they sent me back out to Portland.
Right. I remember Gus Triantos told me that. He called it they needed BS catchers.
During
spring training.
Gus, another Yankee I forgot about. Gus.
Yeah.
And right. So anyway, then
you knew you were temporary at that
time? Yes. I didn't expect to stay. And then the next year was 48. I never had a good year in Portland. I had 247. The next year was same thing. I opened the season again, and then 48, and I had 301, same league, you know. And then, of course, Narhaus got hurt, and that's when I joined the Yankees. And then the next year, Dangle came, Turner came, who was my manager, he's the pitching coach, and I hit well against the Oaks. Casey was the manager. And that's the rest is history.
So you went in that next year, in 49, you went in there pretty much you knew you had a good shot at being the second string catcher.
Well, I was. Yeah.
The job was
That's
good.
The way it is. Yeah, yeah. I took over from Narhouse. Narhouse was the third catcher that year. Hauk didn't make the club. See, there was a lot of changing in the catching department. Until Yogi definitely was a catcher in 49 this day. Then it was pretty much set that I was number two, and then Hauk came in 50, and he was number three until they made a manager out of him.
And then when did Elston Howard come?
He came in 55. And that's when Hauk went to managing, and I dropped to number three. And then I survived through 56, and then making too much money for what I was doing, and they sold me to the Cubs. But I had lost my talent. I had sat around for too long. I was actually the last few years. I was actually a coach, you know.
And then the 57 Cubs.
I sprained my ankle in Memorial Day of 57, and I should have broken it. I said I'd have been better off, and they didn't have the medicines then that they have now, and I didn't get back in the lineup until later on, and I just didn't have it anymore. And then I got released from the Cubs after that year.
Did Billy Martin have anything to do with you going to the Cubs? No.
Billy stayed another year. He stayed in 57, and they got rid of him because they thought he was a bad influence on Martin, on Mantle. All he did was win the Triple Crown.
Yeah, he got blamed for that incident at the...
The Copa? Yeah, I'd have been there, but we left.
Gus was there, too. I guess Gus said he...
Gus was there. Yeah, I'd have been there, but I had left. Yeah. Oh,
what
yeah.
do you remember about that?
I wasn't there. I was gone.
Did they have any carousers on those years? Did they have any Joe Pepitones on the Yankees back then?
No, they were pretty, you know... Mantle and Martin had their... They roomed together. They had their fun. We didn't... the older guys sort of policed... the club for the young guys, you know, I was considered a veteran. I roomed with Joe Collins and Bauer, you know, but Collins for the last 6 years. And we would police the young guys and tell them, you know, you're not gonna mess around. Or you're messing with the money, our money, you know, that we don't stand for that. And then, you know, we'd go to the, if they persisted, you would let the people know, you better get rid of this guy because he's not a Yankee, you know. And so we knew where we were. I mean, we didn't want to, you know, there was, and when you have 2.5 farm AAA club, you know, and then you have 25 minor league clubs, and then you got AA, you know, and you knew who the catchers were down there. You heard about just so-and-so doing pretty well. But it was the best thing for me. I was the number two catcher, and they understood that, and I did my job. I had three great pinch hitters, you know, and Mize, Bear and Woodling, so I get on base and get my nose cleaned.
Did you ever read or hear or did you have first-hand knowledge of that Weiss actually was tailing, had people watching?
Oh, we knew that.
Mantle and Bear.
Yeah. Oh, Casey told us, he said, the detectives are out. Oh, yeah, they play games with them, you know. Whitey Ford, you know, that they used to... They could spot him, you know, and so they'd go, him and Martin, and then they'd go in one door, out the other, you know, and these guys would be trying to chase him, trap him down. And then they put, they, you know, they were so ridiculous, like they had Tony Kubek and Richardson, I guess, the next year, you know, and they were ice cream, you know, they didn't drink.
They were teetotalers.
Well, yes, and there's nothing wrong with that.
But, all American boys.
But they put the gumshoes on them. So all Casey would say is, just want to let you guys know that the detectives are out. That's all. Weiss was a poor guy. He, you know, we found out later on, he was tough to dick with contract-wise. And then it came out in the book that if he saved so much, the money he saved, he would get a part of it. You know. And like some people said, that he had a very short funeral.
Yeah, he's sure been made out to be the bad guy over the
years. Well, yeah, he was the bad guy, but I guess you had to have somebody like him. Right. You know, I mean, he stayed on top of everything because he knew what was going on. He'd sit up in his box up there, and he'd be with his pad and pencil, You know, and we knew that he would be looking down the bullpen, and he had his, the guys come down there, the groundkeeper, you know, and I tell you guys, careful what you do down here. You know, you can go back and have a cigarette, but don't try to sneak a beer or anything like that, because he'll find out about it.
Yeah. What was your relationship with him? Did you ever have
a
contract problem?
I have a letter at home that says, this is when Joe DeVine was still alive. Joe DeVine died in 51, and of course, you know, he was a big man in the Yankee organization because of the players he signed. So I kept sending back the contract, you know. And then the last contract he sent back, I sent it back, and he says, here, sign this contract, don't waste another stamp. And I told Joe DeVine, he said, yeah, well, you better sign it. And he talked to me, he said, that's all you're getting. But I just did it. I figured, you know, I deserve something. But he was tough. Well, you're going to get a World Series. You're going to win a World Series. That's fine. And then he also, in 1950, we had to celebrate, beat the Phillies four in a row in the fourth game in New York. And then we went down the road with having our first child out here. And we all went to the celebration down there. And the wife got a few drinks. And he got up to say something. He says, I want you guys to know that you won the World Series in four games. The club didn't get any cut. You know, the players get the first four games. And then after that, the clubs are included. And he says, I want you to remember that at contract time. Yes.
So you're going to get penalized for doing well.
Yeah.
For sweeping him.
Yeah.
He would have rather
well,
go seven.
He had a pretty good load on.
Couldn't win with that guy.
But that's common knowledge. But he was. But then he had his bunch of his other guys he brought in, assistant Roy Hamey and guys like that. A guy from the Browns, I forget his name, and to save money, you know. And then he wouldn't. I wasn't considered a star, so I didn't negotiate with him later on. That was the way it was. It was tough, you know. He was right. You're going to get World Series money, which in those days amounted to half your salary or almost equaled it, you know.
Well, was he the one that was stealing players from Kansas City? That was his job as general manager, right?
Well, that's the way. Kansas City, of course, was AAA club. Then it went to the big, you know, then the big leagues. And then, of course, the guy that owned it or whatever was close associate of Weiss and the Yankees, and it was more or less like a farm club. They'd shuffle them through there if they couldn't use them at the time, and then they'd play there, and then they'd get them back, you know, trade them.
It seemed like he would just pick up all these good players year after year.
Oh yeah, well, I sure they picked up Maris from there, you know, and of course you see the Yankees could pay them. The Yankees haven't changed that much because in the years that I was there, they picked up Mize from the Giants, who was probably making $25,000 or more, which was big money in those days, maybe $30,000. And he came over. Then they picked up Blackwell. And they picked up Johnny Sain. They picked up Johnny Hopp. They picked up Scarborough, a lot of guys, Kramer. You know, there were all little that might be able to help you out for one or two games. They probably wouldn't be there the next year, although Sane was there, and so Mize was there for the five consecutive. No, he was on those teams, but they could afford to pay.
It also seemed like when they retired of somebody, they'd unload them on Kansas City, get rid of contracts that way.
Well, probably, yeah. I know Sane went over there. A whole bunch of guys went over there. Hank Bauer went over there, you know.
Did you ever worry during your career that you were going to get traded?
Oh, yeah.
There's always rumors about you
getting traded. Always. Especially if the Yankees got off to a poor start. We'd always be wherever. If we were on the road, we'd always be sure we'd be in a hotel because, you know, they would let you know, you know. But I avoided the gun, that so-called gun.
Well, there must have been teams that needed catchers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Starting catchers.
Yes. Oh, well, God. I mean, that book that about... the number of catchers that were there, Triandus Berberet, there are 15 catchers that Yogi, 15 or more catchers that in the Yogi era that didn't make the club or were sold to the club or all spent a certain amount of time with the club and left, but they were number one catchers, most of them. See, I wasn't a number one catcher, not with the Yankees, because the Yogi, I might have gone to someplace else. When they traded you, you didn't go to a first division club in the American League. ever.
They didn't want you to come back?
No, they didn't want you to come back and haunt them. You went to the Browns or Senators or the Athletics. And
they really sent you to the lower level team.
Yes.
Like
and you never come back. The only guy that ever came back when they got rid of was Tommy Byrne. And he learned how to pitch and came back.
So once you were gone, you were gone.
You were gone. Yeah, or they got you out of the league. They get you to the National League. They didn't want anybody to come back and haunt.
That was Weiss's doing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he was efficient, believe me.
Some people from Sabre, when I told them I was going to interview you, they wanted me to ask you some questions. This guy said, 1949, describe Casey Stengel's first year as a Yankee manager. How was he regarded by the fans and players? What was your relationship with him? Did he truly manage to master all the injuries of that year with platooning?
Well, first of all, the spring we're in Birmingham, Alabama, and I just got married. I laid my wife home. You couldn't take your wife to spring training unless you had a job like Yogi. He could take his wife. I couldn't leave Rose. I mean, I couldn't take her. So anyway, so we're coming north, and Jim Turner, of course, had joined us as the pitching coach with my former manager. And so I said, Jim, I said, you know, we're getting close. I want to know if we'll come back to New York. Why don't you go ask Casey? So now here's my first time I'm going to try to talk to Casey, right? Well, ask him that question. You think I got a chance? My wife. Well, he talked for about 15 minutes and gave me the Stengelese, didn't say yes or no. And I walked away and I went to Turner. I said, Jim, I said, I just listened to Casey. I didn't talk to him. I listened. And I don't know what in the hell he said. And he said, I think it'd be safe tell her to come back to meet you in New York. And you have the club made. That was my first. Well, then, of course, we all used to say, you know, God, that with Casey, we thought when we started to know what he was talking about, understand him, then we were really in trouble. Okay, about his platooning. Yeah, that's where it was all the injuries. I got hurt that year. Yogi got hurt, that's why. But that's when he platooned Brown and Billy Johnson, and Mapes and Woodling. Bauer and Mapes, because Hank was a right-hand hitter, and Bauer and Woodling used the different first basemen. The only one who played most of the games who sustained a whole year without a very debilitating injury was Phil Rizzuto. You had Brown and Coleman and Sternweiss, you know, second base. So that was the story.
Now, what of all the teams that won the World Series, you were on what? How many? Five or six?
Seven.
Seven.
Yeah.
What do you think was the best one? The 50 team that swept the Phillies?
Possibly. That was Whitey Ford's first year. That was the year that Whitey went into service after the 50 season for 2 years, and then he came back in 53, and that was the end of the five times. And then they got Allie Reynolds quit. Lopat was and Rashi traded, so that was the first time I really had those four together. That was probably the better club.
Seems like the records all those years are almost identical.
Yes.
98-56, 97-57, 95-56.
The only time Casey ever won 100 games, we got beat by 8. We won 103, Cleveland won 111.
Wow.
And that's and we lose
was
by
that
8.
54?
54. Yeah. And we had... I don't know, mere conjecture. I don't know what everybody said. Well, why wouldn't 53? Well, we got off, you know, we had a great winning streak there. And then we won how many? We won them all on the road, 17, I think. Then we lost 10 in a row. Then we come back and win another 10. And we did that. That's probably the year we won by the most games, 53. But that didn't make us the best ball club. But, you know, there was constant change. And to say that, you know, there was only 8 of us who were there for the 5 consecutive World Championships.
And how many times did you beat Brooklyn? Three?
Well, I was there. 49, 52, 3, and 56, and we got beat by Brooklyn in 55. So we played them five times out of the seven. And the other one was the Giants, 51, and the Phillies. So we never traveled more than 100 miles to Philadelphia.
Right. Now, why do you think all those years you guys owned Brooklyn so much? I mean, you beat them all those years.
Because they had the right-handed power, was pretty much neutralized in Yankee Stadium. And they had hard throwers, or that guy like Newcomb, and Newcomb, you couldn't throw the fastball by our guy. We probably had a little bit of pitching depth. That's why.
And so that your World Series share was, Weiss used to try to say that was part of the salary.
Well, that's what they say, yeah.
And what was the most you ever got for World Series?
I think it was 80. The last year, 56, was 8,600. That was against, we played the Dodgers, but they raised the prices there. The first, year, I think like tickets were $4, six box seats were six and four. And there was no boxes, That's what all the money was.
In the luxury boxes, box. Sure.
In the luxury box. And the box seats, they make box seats and they're not much of a box to them either, But that was it. But I've kept pretty good tab on it. Now, the World Series shares now, in relation to when I played, they've kept that pretty level. Salaries, no.
Yeah, salaries
are out of proportion.
Now, did you ever interact with the Brooklyn Dodgers? Any of the players being in the same city and everything, like Snyder or Robinson? Did you ever talk about Jackie Robinson?
There was no talking. Yogi was the only one that talked during the other players. In those days, you could talk to the other players, you got fined. The umpires would sit in the stands before the game, during batting practice, and they would fine you if they caught you talking to another player.
Wow.
And they got Bobby Brown, who ended up being the president of the American League. And then Bobby, he used to laugh about it. He says, I guess he wrote to the president or whoever it was at the American League at that time. He said, I hope your umpire's eyesight is gets better during the game when they're umpiring, because spotting me, talking to another player. But you don't do that now. God, everybody's
talking on the bases on there.
Oh, God, Rodriguez is talking to the other players during the...
Yeah, probably talking about investments and how they're going to spend their money. So there was a big rivalry between the Giants and the Dodgers during those years.
Oh,
Who was your rivalry with? The Red Sox?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Red Sox. God, that things haven't changed. In fact, it's escalated, ever since then. Well, of course, 49, all right? We're one down with two to go. We win both games in Yankee Stadium. Next year, 1950, we open in Boston. They have us 9-0, right? We beat them 15-10. The race was over.
What, they didn't have any good their pitching?
They had Parnell and Kinder, but it was opening day, and they had a 9-run lead. That's when Martin's first game, he hit two doubles in the same inning, off the wall.
Well, they say, the historians look back and say that Red Sox team could have won three or four World Series, the ones that you guys won. So
they didn't have a shortstop. Bernd Stevens wasn't a good shortstop. He could hit, but he almost get door kill every time. He'd get down on hands and knees to field the ball. No, Williams always said that. If they had Rizzuto, it'd have been the other way around. But they had all the hitters, and they scored all the runs, and they had a couple 20-game winners where we didn't, but we won.
How would you describe your strengths defensively as a catcher?
Mine? I had a fine arm. I could throw, and I could catch.
Did you throw out a lot of runners?
They didn't run that much. Word got around. I tried to pick off a lot. I throw to the bases. And that's why now to see the catchers now don't throw to the bases because they might make an error and it would look good in their average, you know. But that's why Pudge Rodriguez, he throws to the bases. He's probably the best catcher I've ever seen all
really?
Around.
I was going to ask you everything. Who, really?
Well, I mean, he's
better than Bench?
Oh, yeah. He's not as good as he used to be. Because he throws to third base, second base, which I did. Word gets around, then they don't take any chances. Then I was a singles hitter, but I'd get on base. I hit 282 lifetime. Christ, if I wouldn't go. Like I say, I didn't get to hit until June 17th, 1950. You go on the road, you only had a half an hour time, and the extra men would get three swings. That's all you got. And I'd say, Yogi, you take mine. I don't need because I figured if I went up there and swung at every pitch, you know, I know I stayed within myself that I had a good stroke, and I didn't
try screw it up.
And I didn't try to hit home runs. I never hit a ball out of the park in Yankee Stadium. I hit the one home run and I got the ball up there. It says July 4th, 1951, first home run. Well, I could have put in the bottom my onlyest home run. And I got the pitcher whittling. It's up there somewhere. I'm coming around the bases and I'm talking to him. I'm saying, Gene, go out and get the ball. I'll get you a new ball. Went out and got a new ball. He took it out and I got it.
Now, and who did you hit it off of? And
Fred Sanford. And that's the only, I caught a double header. We lost Fred Sanford. Who was with the Senators that year. He had been. We got carried away with the guy from Sabre about his stinkle. I guess, did I answer that?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Then the other one, he says, describe losing the World Series for the first time to Brooklyn. Do you have a sense of how Brooklyn responded?
Yeah, we lost it. It was in Yankee Stadium. Of course, that was Padres' game, and he beat Byrne. It was 2-0, you know. And, they beat us. That's all. It was a long time coming. And I remember Jim Turner saying, okay, you know, yeah, just don't anyway. I could hear him in the clubhouse, you know. Don't, you know, we got beat. Just accept it. That's what happened.
It seemed like probably if you guys didn't win at all every year during those years, probably season seemed like a failure.
That's for sure. You know, we would tell the young kids, you know, when I came in, there was guys like Sternweiss, Lindell, Billy Johnson, and Tommy Henrik, and they all would say, kid, don't mess with our money. Don't mess with our money. And winning, you know, we don't get them tomorrow, we get them today. And, you know, and not a lot of people, we tell, you know, of course I got to be a getter, and that's what we say, you know, scouring every time. He said, well, remember that. You know, I remember that. He got to be older too, a veteran. Don't mess with our money. Don't lose it between a broad's leg or over a bar, you know.
Well, that seems like a lot of pressure. I mean, did some people
they can't
feel the pressure?
Some people couldn't handle it in New York. A lot of guys couldn't take it. You know, that wasn't their idea of baseball. I mean, this was the Yankee way. This wasn't Major League Baseball. You know, the Yankees had on their prospect cards, I later scouted for them, and I was a manager in the organization. They said, on their card, when you evaluated a player, I managed New Orleans and Binghamton, New York, and then the card just says, at the top, is he a major leaguer? Or is he a Yankee? At the very top, is he a Yankee? Is he a major leaguer? Is he a triple A?
Wow.
That's the way their card. I've got a card in there again, still.
Oh, from that rating you?
Huh?
A rating? Yeah. Wow, you would rate players.
No, but this is the Yankee card that they gave the managers and scouts.
Right.
Not a major leaguer. Is he a Yankee?
Right.
Oh, you know, they were a little above. And some people couldn't understand that, you know.
Right.
And they still carried on that tradition. I mean, you know, they thank God for Torrey and Zimmer. Of course, they don't get along with Mr. Steinbrenner.
Zimmer's gone.
Yeah, it looks that way. I guess, you know, he speaks his mind. And
you got to watch himself. He almost got hurt there.
I know. Well, he...
What do you think of that?
Well, he was hitting the head, you know, and he's got a plate in his head. He's a feisty guy.
Yeah, I read his book. It's a great book. So, and they say in 55, that probably wasn't the best Dodger team. That there were other years when they were better that you beat them.
Maybe, yeah. Well,
were you always the favorite going into the World Series?
Oh, I would think so, sure. Well, they had beaten them in 47, 49, 52, 53, and 41. Mm-hmm. So they never won. And we used to, and we played the Dodgers. We played them almost as much as some of our American League club. We'd play them four or five times in we played them three times in Miami, once in Vero Beach, once in St. Pete, three games before the season. Every year we played them three games. Then we played in the Mayor's Trophy game where they had the three clubs played together, right. And then in the World Series.
I
got to know Ferrillo pretty well. He was a quiet type guy. And I'd say, see you next year, Carl, you know. And we traded tickets. But as far as the rest of them, no, I didn't. Because Ferrillo was, I just happened to run into him one time, and he asked, you know, how about, you know, can you get me, I guess it was during, right before the series, can you get me some tickets here? I said, yeah, you get me a couple in Brooklyn. Okay. So we got a deal going, you know, traded tickets.
Great. Now, we'll talk about some players now. Now let's go back and talk about DiMaggio some more. Everybody's so fascinated with him. Why do you think he got a reputation of being kind of put-offish?
Well, primarily, I think that you could put Joe DiMaggio in a field. I've always said this, a field, and there'd be 100,000 people out there, and you could go out there and say, there's Joe, because he had a distinct look to him. And he carried himself with sort of a reverence, I would say, something, you know, in that respect. His life was pretty private. I mean, he didn't do things that, as I know as a player, he didn't do things that would create any attention. He hustled all the time. And he you know, we didn't have a captain when I was there. But Joe was more or less our unofficial captain. And we all looked, you know, we all looked up to him. And he would... He let you have it, and of course he smoked quite a bit in those days, and I smoked. And between innings, we'd go down and have a cigarette down there, and he'd say, hey, "You're not Charlie now, goddamn it! Get that guy going now. Don't get lax back there. You know, make that pitcher work." So he just give me a little, "Okay, yes, sir."
Well, it's famous now that the cigarette and a half a cup of coffee that Sheehy always had.
Oh yeah. Joe would say, "You know, half a cup of coffee." Pete, and then Joe Page was next to him, and he said, "Me too." You know, he said, "Me too." That was the big joke.
Yeah, they said Joe Page was like, they said on every team he kind of had his boy.
Well, Joe Page was his guy, and then he left Billy, he took Billy under his, you know, Billy spent a lot of time, because Joe roomed together, but he couldn't, he'd try to come down and eat with us sometimes in a hotel, you know, people bother him. And we have to say, "Well, you get the hell out of here and let the guy eat," you know, they didn't know who the hell I was or who Cliff Mapes or Joe Collins was, you know, but they went, "Oh, yeah, Big DiMaggio can spend his time." You know, but they just couldn't do it. You know, even during the service, when we were up in Fort Lawton up there, and we'd go to Seattle, and we went to a movie, and the light to come up, and they'd be, you know, a lot of service, "Oh, God, there's DiMaggio. Oh, this is during a war." Well, you know, they didn't have television in those days, but they knew him. And in New York, you can't, you know, God, you used to go back there, and later on, his picture was on the buses, Mr. Coffee, and I was just down, and I followed the Giants down to Florida, and his pictures are still up on the signboard for the Children's Hospital. They got a Joe DiMaggio win, so he's all over. But New York is, he's big. I mean, he was New York.
What about the women? Did the women throw themselves at him?
I guess so. Yeah,
he married a movie star. The first gal was a movie star, right?
I didn't get to meet her. That's when we were overseas that he got home, because he was going through a divorce then, and he and I were in the hospital together, and he He was supposed to be on a bland diet, but he'd tell the nurse. He was in a private room, and I was in the ward. I had an infection in my nose. He told the nurse, go get Charlie. I'm going to have something to eat tonight. But he took care of me.
So what did you guys eat? Spaghetti? What
would
you get?
I had a steak.
Oh, wow.
He was supposed to be on a bland diet. Joe, I can tell it now, Joe. You're gone. I got a picture up there with me and, when I was... in the service with him, and nobody's ever seen this picture. I mean, I've never put it out for publication. You know, I'm 19 years old, and that's in Hickam Field, Hawaii, 44.
Wow, what a great smile.
Yeah,
wow.
That's the nurse, Aquaviva. That little Italian gal.
Now,
he used to say, too, he's telling me, and Yogi says, you're going to be Italian tonight. I said, yeah, well, my name, I can be Italian. And Yogi said, yeah. Then we go to the places, in the, you know, the boys in Chicago, Cleveland. Oh, yeah. I was right there with them.
Now, you're Italian.
Portuguese.
Oh.
And Irish.
I didn't know that.
No,
I bet a lot of people thought you were Italian just because you're like.
Yeah, because of the name. Yeah, well, my family, my father's from Milpitas.
Right. Old.
Well, that was all. Then we had a pear orchard down there.
Yeah. Well, you have relatives.
I started school down here.
You have relatives from the mid-1800s or late 1800s that go back to Milpitas?
1871, my grandfather came to Milpitas.
Wow.
They had the pear orchard down there, Milpitas, Albiso Road, where they put the big power plant there on that road. That was where the ranch was.
Yeah, I read that article. They said you
still... Yeah, I went back into Milpitas.
There was a couple old bars back then, real saloons.
Yeah.
You talked about.
Yeah.
There was, I mean, now you go to Milpitas, it's a
I know.
But city. It was a little city.
It was just two blocks long then.
Right.
There was only a couple hundred people.
Yeah.
Including everything.
Yeah. Did you ever... No, were you in contact with Joe when he was married to Marilyn Monroe? Did you ever get to meet her?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we got to meet her.
Tell me about that.
Well, I only met her a couple of times, and then, you know, and then it was never, first I met her was at a Broadway show that Joe had gotten tickets for, and then after the second act. You know,
intermission.
Intermission, excuse me. I went like this, and there she was. And my wife said, I almost climbed over the seat. And Joe said, Charlie and Rose, I'd like you to meet Miss Monroe. That was it. And another time, but later on.
Why do you think that marriage didn't work?
Why? Well, I guess everybody said that because there were two distinct personalities with... different views in life, I guess, you know, and she was a star in her own right, you know, and Joe, even in New York, Joe, I guess, I don't know, they say that he thought maybe that he'd have a family or something, but I don't know. That's not for me to decide.
Speculate. Yeah. Let's talk about some other guys. Phil Rizzuto.
Yeah.
We haven't really talked about him.
Well, Phil was actually, without Rizzuto, We don't win all those. Because he played every day. Every day. I know he was our... He'd get on base, he could bunt. He could bunt with the best of them. He could hit a ball out of the park when needed. And he didn't have a great arm, but he got the ball away quickly. And between with Coleman and him and Billy Martin, they could make the double play. You see, to play with the Yankees, you had to pack the glove. I mean, you didn't play for the Yankees unless you could feel some. And the Yankees had great team speed. I mean, they go first to third. They didn't steal many bases. I couldn't run at all, but, I mean, I wasn't included in that. I wasn't a regular.
Did you ever get a stolen base?
I think I had probably a back end of a double steal, maybe. I think I got two in the big leagues. yeah, Rizzuto was a gamer. He came out and every day he would give you a game, you know. And he was protected by the other guys, you know. They didn't. And once in a while, if somebody come close to him because of he bunted a lot, you know. And, of course, the pitchers in those days, they'd let you know about it. Well, a little retaliation, you know. You're not going to hurt our guy. I mean, he makes us go.
Yeah.
And so somebody they'd get there's one stuck in their side, you know.
I remember he used to take his bubble gum and put it on.
Hey, that's right. Yeah, he
would. Why did he do that?
Well, that was Crosetti did that. I remember the first time I saw Crosetti and Rizzuto when I went to spring training, they had the gum in the top. And that was, I don't know, that was a fad in those days, I guess.
It made it look like a Dodger hat.
Yeah, and it was peaked. They had it like peaked.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, a little peak up there. Put the bubble gum. I forgot about that.
Well, in those days, they used to, you just threw your mitt down.
Yeah, they left them out on the field.
Did you ever see a ball hit a mitt?
Never. I never saw a game that was decided by something like that. And it was, it was an art, you know, like I remember Phil. They had the gloves were pretty flat in those days, and they'd sail them, you know. And let's say if Rizzuto had to go make a play in a hole, and then he threw it, and then he started to our dugout, and then he'd wheel around and they'd throw their glove out there behind second base.
Like a frisbee.
And of course he was. Scared of anything that moved, insects. And I remember Eddie Joost and Pete Suter with the A's would they could go find a mouse or something or a bug, and they'd stick it up in his fingers, and he'd come out there and all of a sudden, hey, throw the glove up in the air, and Coleman or whoever, Billy Sasson or Bobby Brown, had to go shake the glove out, and then the play could resume. So they had a lot of fun with Phil.
Now, didn't he win the MVP one year?
1950.
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking at here.
1950.
Yeah. He had a 324.
Yeah. He had a great year. Yeah.
200 hits. Again.
He had a career year that year. I think in that was the year, I think, 1950. I think it was Hop on that club.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that was the year.
Johnny Hop.
Yeah, the three first basemen, Collins, Hop, Mize played, and they hit such an average and had so many home runs.
Now, what about Tommy Heinrich? What do you remember about him?
Very good. Tommy was a professional. I mean, he was a ball player. He knew how to play. He started the Stengel dynasty by hitting a home run off of Newcomb the first game of that 49 season. Beat him 1-0. Tommy would wait for a pitch, and if he got it, he handled it. And he played first base, played hurt, played with a broken toe. Was a leader. He would. He was one of those guys that you know, that lets you know that, hey, you're a Yankee kid. Let's act like a Yankee. And he can needle the other club, too. Still alive, living down in Monterey now. Was used to, he lived right up here on, his daughter lived up here on the lakes, the house down the far end.
He had a hip thing recently, right?
Yeah, I think so. I see where he's around to one of the functions.
Yeah, they had a thing, too. I don't know if you've been able to watch it on ESPN Classic about the Yankee dynasties, and they interviewed him for that.
People said, well, I've seen you on it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, great. Back east, I've never seen it.
Yeah. Do you have cable or the dish?
I got a cable. Yeah. I get ESPN.
Yeah, it's ESPN Classic. It's the other.
Is that all?
You might get it anyway if you have normal cable.
Well, guys keep telling me they've seen it. Huh?
Somebody's got to let you know about that because they're great.
They were in here. I'll tell you what. They interviewed me here. And they had three of them came in here.
Oh, so you're in it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Somebody seen me. Hmm. But they were in here. I got a shirt they left here. But what happened? I had an autographed picture of DiMaggio, Williams, and Mantle. Had it up there.
Don't tell me they took it. You're kidding me.
Yeah. I don't know. There were three of them.
And the people from ESPN?
Well, they had one guy that was doing the show and two other guys that were one on the camera and one was a technician, like, you know. So my wife
said, did you ever say anything about it?
No. Who the hell are you going to blame?
Oh, that's terrible.
My wife was the one that spotted it. She's the one.
Because that's what I'm so amazed at is that, like,
you know, even now, she said, "Well, when you come over," I said, "Don't worry, you know." I said, "I'm going to be here, but when there's three of them."
That's terrible. You know, that's bad for the whole business, because one thing I'm amazed at is these retired ball players let me come into their home and interview. You know, I mean, everybody's been gracious. That just gives a bad reputation to people like me.
That happens.
Writers and
it happens.
People.
You know, they know that's worth money.
They took the most valuable, one of the most valuable ones, too.
Yeah, and that was...
When did you notice it was gone the next
day? My wife did. Within a few days after.
That's
she
terrible.
Said, "Where's your call?" I said, "Well, who am I going to call?" One of them, there was the one guy, then they lease out they paid people. Cameraman.
Right.
Technician.
That's horrible. That gives me a bad feeling.
Well, I know.
Okay, so then now let's talk about Billy.
Billy Martin.
Do you think, why was he, did you ever read that book, High and Tight?
Well, yeah.
Wild, High and Tight?
Some of it. Because a lot of it's lies. Because I was there and a lot of those things never happened. People, Kramer's book. Kramer sat here, but...
Kramer?
Yeah, he was here twice. Huh? Interviewed me. Twice. The only thing he put in there that I was in a service with DiMaggio. All he wanted was some dirt, and he waited till after Joe was dead that he put the book out.
Right.
But he spent all his time, went down to a restaurant,
right,
this and that,
yeah,
and interviewed friends of ours, and then didn't put the things in that I said about it. But he slanted things his way, he almost using my terminology or whatever it was, you could see, but making him sound, and he went down and got all the garbage from a lot of Joe's friends. See, Joe alienated a lot of people because he wouldn't kiss their ass, people he grew up with, but that was Joe.
Yeah, I heard that.
Jealousy.
Dee Pollette said the same thing, that they went down there and tried to get to him to say bad things about DiMaggio, but that he wouldn't do it.
No, neither would I. I had too much.
They wait till the guy's dead.
That's right.
Yeah.
Same way with Billy. Billy Martin and I roomed together when he and I and Hank Bauer roomed together. Because I had played against Billy in the Coast League. And I had met him. We used to work out at Oakland. And, Billy's a feisty little guy. God, we were all of his marriages, and we made a pact. We would sit around in New York, and he wasn't playing. I wasn't playing. And he said, if I ever get a job managing the Oakland Oaks, Billy, you'll be my coach. And I said, if I ever manage the Seals, I'll be your coach. And by God, when he got the job managing Minnesota, he called us. And he was great to Rose. Billy was a blue collar fan type of guy. The fans loved him because he fought millionaires. Well. That was the wrong thing to do. You don't fight millionaires, you don't fight owners.
And why do you think he was so successful as a manager, able to take these teams and turn
because
them
he had more guts than anybody I've ever known. He would put a squeeze on. He didn't care if he was at home or not. And he tried plays. He had the courage of his own convictions. And he just did but he would get a little upset at times, But everything, everything was, something was going to happen. I used to tell him, "I can't fight or can't run, so be careful tonight." And we'd go. Rose and I would be out with him, and he'd get somebody get in front of him. He'd want to fight him. He wouldn't back down to anybody.
He had like the chip on his shoulder, or little man syndrome.
Yeah, well, in a way, but everybody knew that. Then he wouldn't accept any challenge. He wasn't afraid of anybody. But, he brought a few players, brought Merrill Cohn back, gave him pension time. Other people, Greg Nettles' nephew, gave him pension time. Greg Nettles' brother.
Were you
did little things.
Were you living here when you managed the A's?
In
the 80s?
Yeah, I didn't go with him. I was I started taking my pension after we got fired. See, I was his coach. At Minnesota, Texas, and...
Oh, you're with Texas, too?
Oh, yeah, Minnesota, Detroit, and Texas.
He had real problems in Texas with the Short?
Not so much. No, not Short. It was the well, Short was the owner, and that's when we had problems. They had the big gas shortage then, and Short ran out of money. He had hotels and trucking. They had to sell some players, or we'd have won the damn thing. And but he had trouble with some of the other people down there.
And that's when you had Fergie Jenkins, and
yeah,
it was a pretty good team.
Yeah, all we needed was a left-handed pitcher, and we couldn't get one. We couldn't buy anybody.
Yeah. So he turned the team around and get in confrontation with the owners because they would try to tell him what to do, and then he just
Billy didn't listen to too many people, which was one of his faults. You know?
So you had wanted to, you could have coached with the Yankees for him, probably.
Probably. Yeah, he. Mom went back when he was with the Yankees, and I got a job through him. And then with the A's, you know, I didn't want to go back. I was already. See, once you start collecting your pension, you can't get you don't get any more time. So I had enough. I mean, after 75, that was my last year. But then I got the job when he came to Oakland with him. You know.
And what was your job?
Oh, well, I was minor league catching instructor, specialist, special scout, you know, special assignments.
So who was the catcher you worked with in?
It wasn't. It was minor leagues, minor league system.
So did you coach any catchers in the minors that later went on and did well in the majors?
Well, Heath was there. He was with Oakland. Mickey Tettleton, Kearney. Quite a few. No, it was a good job. But I was living here, yeah. But see, Billy, but I used to see Billy all the time, and we roomed together. And he was good. He was, you know, you had to know him.
How about Ralph Houck?
Ralph was, we spent a lot of time in the bullpen together. Had a few drinks together, because we knew that Yogi was going to be catching the next day. But we did our job. We were actually like coaches. We helped, you know, help keep the pitching staff in order, and then we made a study of the game. Ralph, I could have managed. I knew the game, but I was too nervous. Ralph had a better temperament to manage than I did, and he paid attention. He knew that that he wasn't going to be a player, but I mean, he knew where he was, and they groomed him. They groomed him for a. The manager's job, but of course Ralph, you know, he got quite a career. He during the war, he was in the Rangers, volunteered for the Rangers, and got a battlefield commission, ended up a major. So he was qualified. Tough guy.
Now on these pitchers, Lopat, Rashi, Byrne, Reynolds, Ford, I mean Page, what an incredible lineup in 50. Tell me about
Rashi,
handling of pitchers and what.
Well, Rashi had come out to Portland and to be under the guidance of Jim Turner, and I caught him there, and then he rejoined the Yankees and during the 47 season. And I caught Vic quite a bit with the Yankees, and he's a very mild-mannered guy. He could walk up and slap him in the face, you know, when he wasn't pitching, different proposition. Couldn't talk to him. He always sat in one seat in Yankee Stadium. And I'm catching him one day, and it was a hot day, and I went down to the water cooler, and I came back and sat down in one seat. And he's down the water cooler behind me, and next thing you know, he came back and looked around, and he said, "Get your ass over!" He says, "That's my seat." But he'd always say, if I go into the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning with one run lead, they're not going to beat me. And that was Reynolds' way of thinking. And Lopat did more with limited stuff than any man I've ever seen. And, you know, those guys went out and pitched. They pitched, you know, 3 days rest and went out and performed.
What about Allie Reynolds?
Oh, he's tough. The chief was probably the toughest guy to handle that I ever caught, because he was sort of short armor. And he had a great curveball, and he bounced the ball up, and he was tough, and his ball was always moving him. He had great movement on everything. And Allie, I think he pitched it was about 8-9 years in the big league before he ever pitched a game without walking a man. So he got to know, got to control everything. And then, of course, he did a lot of relieving, too. But he was tough, and he gave him a little chin music, too.
And what about Whitey?
Oh, Whitey was... I guess I saw him in the best game I ever... I never caught a no-hitter in pro ball. Only caught one... in high school, I caught one. One night against Cleveland, Whitey pitched, and I caught him, and the only hit they got off him early win, the pitcher topped the ball down the third baseline. That was the only hit he gave up, and he was... He more or less, Whitey wanted the ball back, and when his curveball was working, it was just, I didn't even give him a sign. Just keep coming, if they can't hit it. And he kept in motion. He didn't want any complicated sign. He just, give me the ball, let me go. And he, a little short arm, ride the ball in. Later on, he got the scuff in the ball, and he was like a pixie. Still the same. Whitey, I can hear Jim Turner talking about when he first came up, I was hitting, and he says, and Whitey's throwing batting practice, and then, so he said, Charlie, I'm going to have him throw a change. No, he wouldn't have Whitey throw a change to DiMaggio or, some of the stars because he upset their time and so on. I said, well, yeah, go ahead. See, here comes the change. He had a great throw, man. Let's throw another one. Yeah, throw another one, Whitey. Okay. So that was it. But he had great command.
They said he used to sharpen his belt buckle, and if he could get a groove in that ball, he could make it hop and do all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah, and mud. He had a mud ball later on, but he didn't need that when I first... I didn't catch him that much. Of course, like I said, he spent 2 years in the service, and then when I came out, I caught him a few games. But that was the one game closest to catching a no-hitter in the majors.
Well, you were there for a lot of history. One tragic thing, were you there when... McDougal hit Herb Scorn.
That was the next year.
Yeah, were there when Martin made the catch that supposedly saved the World
Series. Yeah, 52 series, sure.
What do you remember about that play? That was almost a disaster.
Well, I was out in the bullpen in Brooklyn. And, the thing is, in Yankee Stadium and Brooklyn, the catchers back us to the field. And you couldn't... we're warming up. Generally, it was always the battle, and we're all warming up most of the game. And I'd have to see the movies of the series a lot of times.
Do you remember who you were warming up?
Then? Well, Kazaba was, I don't know who the hell, 52. I'd have to see who
was on. Kazaba was the winner.
Yeah, he was the winner. He was the one that popped up. Robinson. Okay, and it was Joe Collins said he lost the ball. He looked into the sun, in between the upper deck and the lower deck, there was a thing, and he says he lost the ball, and he lost sight of it. And Billy came a long way. You see him, he made one tremendous catch. Really.
And he was the MVP of that series, right?
Billy was, yeah. Or was it the next year?
I don't remember.
The next year he got all the hits.
Right.
I don't know, was it that? They're backing up. My memory's a little...
That's all right. You got...
Better. I mean, I've always had a pretty good memory. Very retentive.
And then you were there when Don Larsen...
Warmed him up.
Threw the perfect game.
I've got the glove. Got the glove in the other room.
What do you remember about that day?
Well, I remember that he...